Welcome again to the GiriaGirl.com official podcast, and I've got a very cool guest with you. I met up with him when I was in New York recently, and we didn't really have an opportunity to record a podcast, and I'm not sure when I'm going to get back up there again soon. It will be soon, I just don't know when, but I figured, hey, let's go ahead and have a talk now. Anyway, this is Rolando Garcia III. If you read my blog or dragondoor.com, you're already familiar with him. He has a book coming out. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But he works at Equinox, which if you haven't heard of that yet, I'm sure he'll tell you what it is. It's very special. But anyway, welcome to the podcast, Rolando. And you're in a cab right now in New York. Is that correct?
Yes, that's pretty much it. Thank you, first of all, Adrian, for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And thank you for having me on your podcast. And yes, I am in a cab right now. That's just how it goes in New York. We're always zipping through one thing to another. And cab is my preferred mode of transportation.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're not on the subway because this would be a terrible connection.
I agree. That's very spot on.
Yes. Yes. Cool. So we were talking a little bit on Facebook before, and you mentioned you wanted to kind of discuss the future of personal training. And... Mm-hmm. You know, something, I don't know what all you want to talk about with that. There's so many ways we could go with it, which is super exciting. But I've been working a little bit with a local coder and app designer lately, and it's made me sit down and think about usability and about really the importance of the person-to-person, face-to-face role that personal trainers can play, as well as personal training or semi-personal training, which is also seeming to become more and more popular these days. While the while the technology is cool, there's nothing that can replace another human being connecting with another human being and helping those changes occur.
I agree. I agree with that 100%. And I think that the growth in technology in the fitness sector is symptomatic of a couple of things. The most important thing is that, fitness seems to be much more popular. It's something that people are taking far more seriously because it's something that they're willing to invest in. I mean, if you take a look at some of the technology that's out there, app-related, hardware-related, I mean, the sales... they're actually very steady. I wouldn't necessarily call it robust, but it's very competitive. Mm-hmm. And it's getting a lot of mainstream exposure. And I really believe that this is indicative of how the fitness market, it's not something that people are speculating in anymore. This is something that people are very much taking very seriously and really integrating into their lifestyle. So people aren't necessarily saying, well, work-life balance and the work-life being, all right, I'm going to work my butt off and then go to a bar. Ugh. People don't really see their lives that way anymore. It's like, well, I'm going to work, but then my life is, well, now I'm going to focus on me. And what are those good things that's going to focus on me? Well, I'm going to focus on having a healthy relationship with myself. So I stick to the behaviors that are healthy for me. And a big part of it is going to the gym so that I'm moving. And then I'm far more aware of my nutritional choices. And then I'm far more aware of my recovery choices. So this is why, going out partying isn't really the option in terms of work-life balance anymore, because that's actually taking away from you.
Yeah.
And people nowadays, they take their work very seriously. They take greater ownership of their lives. So, hey, if I'm going to work out, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm actually going to measure what I'm doing and making sure that I'm tracking my progress so that, this has a really serious, measurable, realistic impact in my life. And so with that growth in fitness technology, it's really an indicator of people just taking it far more seriously. That's number one. Mm-hmm. The other indicator of it is that it's now far more mainstream. More people are getting into this. So not just the people who are already adapted into the lifestyle are taking it seriously. Now there's more. It's far more mainstream. And now that it's far more mainstream, the need for experts in the field to be able to give the appropriate direction, give the appropriate guidance, the appropriate motivation, inspiration towards this is far more necessary than ever.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny, we're talking about being, it's getting more mainstream. Last week, I read a lot of different things. And one of those things I've started reading recently, thanks to a gift from my father, is Barron's. And Barron's is an investment, it's, I don't know if you call it a magazine. It's like a newspaper. It's on newsprint, and I get it every Saturday. And one of the articles that I really enjoyed was about the CEO of Under Armour. And it was talking about how he's, you know, kind of expanding into that market as well. For instance, they recently purchased MapMyFitness and MyFitnessPal and Indomondo, along with some of their own apps. And I have an Under Armour heart rate monitor, the Armour 39, that I actually, you know, for a heart rate monitor, it's not bad. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how they're making this fitness accessible and desirable to the mainstream. And it's like, you know, it's super important. But a lot of times people are going to jump in a little too fast because they just don't know. And we need to be out there educating and and all that good stuff. Now, before we get too far, when is your book coming out again? I always forget.
It looks like we're looking at mid to late March. It's going to be available on the Dragon Door website and on Amazon.
Excellent.
So it's going to be available online for purchase. And from what I understand, according to John Duquesne, CEO of Dragon Door and my publisher, it's going to be available in brick and mortar bookstores, Barnes & Noble in particular. They're going to be carrying the title. So that's very exciting, and that's going to be in June.
Excellent.
And the title of the book is Intrinsic Excellence, Business Development and Leadership Systems in Personal Training. And it's really about what the methodology that I use, not only necessarily to make myself successful as a fitness professional, but also in my time as a manager, in terms of how that methodology is repeatable, in that it's not just something that succeeded for me. It helped produce several, you know, in fact, several very successful fitness professional who were under my management at the time, and they became successful, that it turned around an entire PT division. And that's what the methodology is. So there's the repeatability aspect of it.
Yeah.
There's the validation of it on a far more empirical level. And that's what the book is about. And I think that it's something for a lot of people who are going into fitness, whether it's group fitness, whether it's personal training, or whether it's even spa. In other words, wherever you are in the fitness realm, whether you're doing a one-on-one personal training or you're doing group training or whether you're helping people recover from training, this is the book that's for that fitness professional who really wants to succeed in this and make it a true profession for them, and that they make a living wage off of this. And I believe that considering how much more mainstream the fitness industry is, I think there are going to be more opportunities, but more importantly, more demand for this. And so with there being more demand, it's going to be important for people who want to step into this profession to have the appropriate tools and the appropriate toolkit. And this is the book for it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny. I've read it probably in some form or another, maybe two or three times all the way through, if we do the math. And I absolutely agree. This is one of those books, and you guys will see me post every now and then on like a Dragon Door blog post or whatnot, where I'm like, man, if I could just send this through a time machine, you know, and this book, absolutely, if I could send this through a time machine, would have definitely helped as I got started out in personal training. And I think, you know, one of the biggest lessons, you know, just right off the bat, there's a load, just tons and tons and tons of lessons in your book, but probably one that just really hit home and that I see people struggle with, even very established coaches, you know, they focus so much on their technical knowledge that they forget all the other stuff. And the technical knowledge is one of four parts of what you talk about.
Yeah. That's correct. And, the methodology, the what I named when I was teaching it at my previous division, is called the four competencies method, meaning these are the four core skill sets that you really need to be at, good at in order to become a successful personal trainer. And technical expertise is important, but gone are the days when all you needed to do was get a national certification, be in shape, and then go into a gym and say, hey, you know what, I can help you get in shape. Like what we were saying, fitness is a far more mainstream endeavor now. Everybody's into it. But since it's mainstream, our client base, our market base is far more educated. They are they're far more discerning and discriminating. Therefore, going in there with, you know, the six-pack, ripped abs, and having a national cert isn't going to cut it anymore because we have a far more educated base.
Yes.
And there are far more trainers on the field. So the trainer of the future is going to need to have an awareness of those skill sets. And I'm gonna go on a tangent here a little bit. Dan John, who's one of our master archer KCs and pretty much just a solid guy, you know, overall, one hell of an educator, one hell of an athlete, one hell of a fitness professional. He wrote the foreword to my book, and he himself said in the book, I'm a 25%er, meaning I myself am also just invested in technical expertise. And he says in the foreword that he found the things that I discovered in the book happening because it's the truth. The truth of what we are doing as a profession and the truth of the future of our profession is that if you're going to succeed in this, you got to know how to sell. If you don't know how to sell in this profession, you're dead. If you don't know how to do customer service, you're dead. If you don't have the type of skill sets that's pretty close to an MBA degree in terms of managing your business, you're also dead.
Right.
Because the future of this is that you need those four things in order to manage a very dynamic and very growing and competitive industry and profession, which is personal training and fitness.
It's funny too, because this isn't just personal training. I mean, I was telling you a couple weeks ago, like, you know, yes, this is applied to personal training, but we could also take the same principles in your book and swap out every time it says fitness or personal training. We could put in just about any professional services career in that place, and it would be,
Correct. You
know, absolutely relevant, if not crucial.
Correct. It applies to a lot of people, not only in the fitness field, but also in the medical field. I mean, I'm going to give you an example of this. Something that is very important for people who are very invested in their profession in terms of technical expertise. It's not just personal trainers. It's also group fitness people.
Right.
And it's also people who do tissue manipulation. You're also talking about people who do acupuncture, people who do chiropractic, people who do nutrition. Because, and I'm going to go a little further away from fitness, health and fitness. I'm going to go in the medical field. If you are the type of individual who relies on the lab coat and the type of lab coat lingo in order to help treat a condition as opposed to engaging a person, you're also not going to do very well because the person who is in front of you is dealing with, let's say, a condition that they know nothing of.
Right.
And so when you're going to engage them in a conversation around their particular condition, it's important to engage the person because that's the only way they're going to volunteer any of the information you need as far as the intake process.
Right.
And that's how you know that you're going to get your level of compliance around the recommendations that you give, whether it's some form of medicine, some form of practice, or if, as they refer you out, they need the x-ray or MRI or whatever, or the surgical procedure. If that person who is on the receiving end does not trust your recommendation, they're not going to buy into it. And that trust is based off of the type of client-professional relationship that is pretty much all across the board in all of those professions wherein client services is of the utmost in that particular offering.
Yeah.
It's a client service model, meaning sales, if someone comes up with an objection, you better know how to address that. And
right.
It's not just price.
Mm-hmm.
People will sometimes come up with an objection around your intervention. Well, I think you need knee surgery. Why do I need knee surgery? Well, I think you need knee strengthening. But wait, isn't it the hip ankle complex? Isn't that what's bothering my knee? Well, I think you need, regardless of what the intervention is, if you don't know how to manage an objection, i.e. a sales core competency, you're done. The person's not going to talk to you again.
Yeah.
If you don't know customer service, you don't know how to just say hello to a person, give them praise when they do follow through on an intervention,
right.
Or if they're feeling bad that day, like somebody comes in and they're about to do a spa therapy with you, a soft tissue manipulation, and then they say, you know, I'm just having a really bad day because, you know, I was at work and we were going through some of the CDOs and this is just not working out for me. And you're just nodding your head and you're not addressing what the other person is. If your customer does not feel the sense that they're being heard or listened to,
right,
then that person is not going to trust you the minute they say, ow, that really hurts when you're pressing on my gastro.
Right. And it's like building that rapport is so important. Like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've started working with somebody and I've asked them, hey, you know, what kind of, you know, do you have any previous injuries? And of course they say no. They always say no, you know, unless it's something like super catastrophic, you know, but then you, about 5-10 minutes in, after you've built a little bit of rapport, all of a sudden the real story starts coming out. And at that point, you can really start doing your job. But if you hadn't built that rapport, that trust, they may have not relaxed enough to remember, oh, yeah, by the way, I had a knee replacement. Oh, by the
right.
way, this and that. And, you know, also with building that rapport, you can meet your client on their level and kind of speak their language. What was it, a week and a half ago, funniest thing happened in the world. I was training someone a little bit on the geeky side. I tend to get a lot of very cool clients who are very technical people, very high level, sometimes IT, sometimes developers. Anyway, just very technical engineering type of folks. And I know how to speak mm-hmm. with them because I grew up with a lot of friends like that. And mm-hmm. I was talking to this one guy. We were working on his squat, kind of fixing his movement pattern. It was funny because I'm like, I knew that he had the right pattern was in there. We just needed to get, you know, kind of wrap his head around it. And I forget what combination of words I had said to him, but something clicked. He did that next rep, and I'm like, okay, I said, what just happened in your mind right now, regardless of if you think it's silly, it's not, because that was a 110,000% improvement. And he had likened what I had said. It had triggered this mental image of a comic book character, and of course, I can't remember who it is right now, but I did write it down, who had like rockets in his shoes. And he mm-hmm. pictured that kind of blasting off, and boom, it fixed his squat. I'm like, all right, I wrote down that custom cue for next time. In case you forget, I'll say this combination of words, and boom, it was there. But I mean, it was like night and day. Went from terrible posture and a very substandard, ow, makes my knees hurt to watch squat, to a beautiful squat you could have put in a textbook.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't that he had gained a ton of strength in 10 seconds. It was just, you know, he got the neurons lined up and it made sense mm-hmm. to him. And we talked mm-hmm. about it where he was at. I didn't throw a bunch of anatomy words at him, you know, nothing like that.
Yeah. And you know, I think that you hit it spot on. And what happened from what I'm hearing is that eventually you got the compliance and you got the person to improve themselves, ultimately, because what you're describing is ownership of a specific process.
Mm-hmm.
That's what ended up happening, because when you didn't tell him to think about rockets, you didn't think about tell him to think about a particular cartoon. He came up with that himself.
Right.
And what this has done is that you have enabled him to, by giving him an environment that's supportive,
mm-hmm.
that is professional, so that it engendered the trust. But what does that trust absolutely engender? It allows that particular client that you have to immerse themselves in their unique process so that they can accomplish what they need to accomplish. That's one layer.
Mm-hmm.
That is one layer of the sales and customer service core competency in being a fitness professional, in that you manage the objection, whatever objection they had. You gave them the appropriate praise and support and assistance. And so they were then able to achieve that process for themselves.
Right.
And that's what makes what we do ultimately very empowering, not only for the client, but also for you. You're absolutely jazzed about it.
Oh,
that
totally.
This person was able to do it.
Yeah. And I also now know that if he goes home and on a day that we don't train, if he practices squats, I have a reasonable expectation that he's going to be safe. And, you know, that's a big relief to me, because, you know, sometimes you give people an at-home workout and you're like, oh boy, I hope this goes right, you know, and now it's like, I know it's going to go right, and I can't
yes.
wait to hear about the results.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, sounds like you're getting on the ferry.
I'm getting out of the cab.
Oh.
That's what I'm doing. And on to the ferry I go.
All right. Well, it's kind of fun to be vicariously in New York right now. And I'm having to run the air conditioner down here. It's almost 80 degrees in Florida. It's super annoying. I want more winter. Sorry. But what's it like up there today?
It's beautiful. It's sunny out, 55 degrees. So I'm just enjoying the day. So it's really awesome. I just came from E, and I trained a couple of clients, spoke to a couple of my coaches, caught up on some of their nutrition plans for our clients. That's super stellar.
Excellent. I just love that facility that you're in. It is amazing. You know, it's gorgeous. It's everything that, you know, I would want in a gym, and super, super cool. I've got to come up there and train with you next time.
Yes, next time. We got to make that happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do want to add one thing
mm-hmm.
that's important in our discussions of, okay, you have four competencies. The fourth competency really is business development, because if you have your technical expertise,
mm-hmm.
you have your ability to sell and overcome objections,
mm-hmm.
and you have the ability to retain your clients through the appropriate customer service.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is business development, and this is the one where there's a bit of a brain shift,
mm-hmm.
and it's the ultimate measure of how you can succeed at this as a fitness professional,
mm-hmm.
because you can get someone to do that beautiful rep. You can get someone to achieve their single-digit body fat percentage.
Mm-hmm.
But if this fourth competency is not there,
mm-hmm.
meaning your ability to understand what is actually happening in your business as a whole in terms of your ability to produce revenue.
Right.
Right. Those three other competencies, a person can become this very popular fitness professional, someone everybody loves, but mm. for some reason is still in the red.
Mm.
And it is at this point, you know, maybe about 10, 12 years ago, when personal training was really more of a side gig,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was, and I'll be very honest here, you know, in the industry, even as recent as about 7, 6 years ago, personal trainers or fitness professionals, whether you're in group fitness, spa, or personal training, it was kind of considered a side gig, because you were really kind of an actor,
mm.
musician, waiter on the side.
Right.
So there was a level of unreliability involved. So the business development aspect of it is very important, because gone are the days when personal training and being a fitness professional is an absolutely serious business. It's just not something that can be overlooked anymore in terms of the absolute feasibility of this chosen profession.
Right. Well, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned the like waiter thing. For instance, here in Winter Park, Florida, it's almost a cliche, but it's like every other waitress or barista is also a yoga teacher. You know, it's like, it's like, really? Oh, okay. That's a different industry in some regards, but, you know, even, you know, a lot of people have a gym and it might be, you know, they're semi-retired, but they also have this gym. And at that point it's like, well, is this some kind of tax thing or are you trying to make money? I can't tell.
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, it's not just, you know, whether the person is a personal trainer, group fitness. I've run into people who this person is a martial arts instructor and they have their own school, but it turns out they have another side gig. They're a bartender or, you know, they own a gas station. But, yeah, I've heard it all. Or they work at the ferry, right?
Right.
Or then, you know, and you will find some people who are even in the medical profession who are doing some sort of side gig. And it's simply because of this, even in medical, you'd be surprised. You know, even some people in medical have a second or third job. So this is something that affects this approach, this four competencies approach affects a lot of professions, a lot of industries, because a lot of these people I've found really actually just want to concentrate on one thing. The one thing that they love, you know, the one person, you know, the person who is actually their real love is soft tissue manipulation. Mm-hmm. And they want to stay with soft tissue manipulation, but they're just not getting the clients,
right,
or they're not getting the patients.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is, okay, I'm going to dabble a little bit in nutrition, but then I'm also going to dabble a little bit into yoga, but I'm also going to dabble a little bit into bartending. So you're never really doing the very thing that makes you happy,
right,
the very thing that actually sustains you. So now you're spread out too thin, mm-hmm, just to make ends meet.
Right.
And that is the one thing that I want to a lot of people to avoid, because people have the right to live the lives that they want to live and be good at the things that they're good at and make money at it and actually live a good life doing it. That's why that fourth competency, business development, is so very important. There are a lot of people I've run into as health, fitness, medical professionals who, when I look at their entire balance sheet and I look at their client base or patient base, there was one chiropractor I worked with, I looked at his, you know, patient, and I was just, you know, what you really need here is actually 6 new patients a month for the next 6 months, and you should be fine for as long as you keep your attrition rate at somewhere between 5% and 8% at the most. So even just being able to do something like that,
right?
But can you imagine, you know, this self same chiropractor has to do all these other side gigs just to make ends meet. And I'm not even talking about the loans. I'm talking, you know, that this person had to take on just to be able to do this profession, right? Yeah, this is a very, very broad subject that we're talking about, because at the end of the day, I'm going to go a little further here. If we're talking medical, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Here you are, you're trying to make ends meet also because you have all these loans.
Right.
It's not just that you're trying to become successful at this. You got to pay off these student loans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which are significant. This is why this book and the ideas that I talk about in it is of the utmost importance, because we are now living in an age where people do want to help. They do want to pursue their passion. But by being so invested in the pursuit of their passion, they don't have the appropriate support system in order to just get that business going. It's not offered. It's It's not offered on college campuses. It's not offered in medical school. They touch on it a little bit, maybe. Kind of the same thing with other certifications. They touch on it, but they never immerse themselves in it.
Right.
And what I want with this book, when people purchase it, is to be able to immerse themselves in the things that will actually help them become a successful business in whatever profession they happen to have chosen.
Right. Well, you know, it is really interesting with this, because I remember when I first got my first personal trainer certification, like it must have been like 2008 or 2009. And it's like, okay, I studied this textbook, I took this computerized test, and then, all right, oh, now what? Oh, crap, what am I going to do? You know, and at that point, you know, without having a resource like your book, I was kind of at a loss. I ended up, you know, kind of meeting some local trainers and learning from them. But, you know, it was hit or miss. It wasn't a system. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people, even who maybe even consider themselves to be established trainers, just from the number of years they've been at it, may also benefit from your book. And I wanted to ask you really quick, since we're talking about the importance of business development, where do you feel like trainers typically fall down in business development? Like, what's the biggest problem you see?
Because on the one end, they have a mission to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And then their mission to help people gets in the way of what they're actually into, which is building a business. And it comes down to something, and I had this exact discussion with one of my clients, and I said, this is the one key thing that if you are going into any of these professions, you have to make up your mind on what you're going to do. Because if you go in with a confused mindset, you're going to confuse yourself in the process. And it comes down to this one thing. Are you a service or are you a business?
Wow.
Because the purpose of a service and the purpose of a business are two absolutely mutually exclusive things. And the confusion that a lot of fitness professionals run into is that they think that they are running a service, but expecting the outcome of a business.
This is huge. Huge. Wow. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are going to really be helped by just hearing what you just said. That was awesome.
I'm glad. Because what is a service? Well, you know, all the people that I've ever worked with in fitness, whenever I would interview them, let's say I'm hiring somebody, I ask them, well, why'd you get into this? Well, I want to help people. That's great. That's a service. I want to help people. I want to help people get in touch with their chakras. I want to help people because I want them to understand their nutrition. I want them to get better sleep. I want them to have better quality of life. That's great. Then you're offering a service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The problem is, when they have to go in there and actually offer the service, and now they have to name a price for the service.
Uh-huh.
And then the person that they're trying to serve is saying, you know, that kind of is expensive or out of my budget or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. And this is why, you know, a lot of these fitness professionals have heart palpitations when it comes down to the discussion of price of their services, is because one part of their brain is saying, well, I'm supposed to be helping them.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of their brain is, if I don't close this person, I have to pay my rent.
Right.
I can't pay my rent if I don't close this person. So now, at that very moment, when they are asked this question, they're actually still trying to figure out whether they are a service or a business, when it could have helped them if they had figured that out way before they got in. By the time you're offering a price to your services, you are officially a business. Once you have made that decision, there is no turning back.
So true.
Yeah.
And, you know, something to remember for, you know, people that might be experiencing some cognitive dissonance at this moment is, a lot of times client compliance can hinge on how much value they have attributed to the service that you're providing. So if you cut them
Correct.
Too much of a break, they'll be like, oh, this is cheap, whatever, and they may blow
Correct.
You off. And they may not
Correct.
Take you seriously.
This is correct. In fact, what I have found in our industry, and more importantly, in the experiences of the trainers that I have managed, the fitness professionals I've run into, is that in the process of thinking that I'm going to help this person out, I'm going to give them service, I'm going to knock it out,
right,
the price point, the level of compliance is much lower, the level of attendance is much lower, and the attrition rate is much higher. In other words, you're going to essentially set yourself up with a client who's not going to come in and take the training seriously.
Right.
They're not going to come in as much as they need to. And by the way, in 3 months, they figured, well, it didn't cost me that much, so I might as well just bail. Yeah, I lost a few pounds, but at the end of the day, what did it actually cost me? So since it cost me practically nothing, then it's going to cost, it cost me nothing to stay, then it's going to cost me nothing to leave. One thing we have found is that if the level of investment, both in financial resources and time resources, are substantial, the reason why the client stays, both from the perspective of attendance and compliance, both in the workout and behavioral compliance outside of the actual gym, is because they are looking to get their return.
Right.
They need to get their return because the initial investment was so substantial. This is why it works out as a business, because on the one end, they paid for your services. Number two, it's the client who is trying to justify the value, not the fitness professional.
Right. They're wanting to get their ROI, you know? And
That's correct. That's correct. That's why it's very important. Mm-hmm. Notice something, even for yourself. I want you to notice something for yourself here. If you had to travel 2 hours to get to, let's say, a particular workshop.
Okay.
Versus 5 minutes to get to a particular workshop.
Right.
Trust me, the one that you're going to make the time to go to, the one that you're going to find absolutely important, is the two-hour workshop. Because why? This investment in resources is going to be substantial from the get-go.
Right.
So you have to really justify that attendance. 5 minutes, it doesn't even really matter. Yeah, you're going to look at, well, let's see what it does it have to offer.
Right. And it's funny, I experienced a little bit of that, you know, when I came up to visit New York, there was a scarcity factor. It was like, hey, guys, I'm going to be here for about 2 weeks. I'm going to be teaching classes for a week. I can help you out. I've come all the way from Florida, and I've got a lot of tips that may be your game changers. And boom. Selling out classes left and right, left and right. And, you know, it's like, okay, there's that scarcity factor. And I was able to help a lot of people, which was super cool. And, you know, and I don't think that I need to fly hundreds of miles away to make that happen locally if, you know, I continue to position myself as the expert in certain things that I am. And I think a lot of personal trainers and group instructors may be missing out on that kind of opportunity in their own practices. So
I agree.
So they need to read your book. I'm trying to think if I saw this correctly on Facebook or not. I see so many things on Facebook. Are you presenting at this year's Health and Strength Conference?
That is correct. I am.
Yes. Yes. I'm looking forward to that. And I hope to see a lot of familiar faces there. And yeah, that's going to be exciting. Your presentation last year was very cool and very helpful. And
thank you.
Yeah, you've got some super fans who are friends of mine, and I hope they're listening right now. They know who they are. So
thank you. The presentation last year was real. It's a setup for this year, because last year's presentation was really about, well, what are we looking at? What is the actual landscape? Well, the landscape is that people are far more invested, and the way we're measuring the level of investment in terms of health and fitness is that they're buying more technology.
Right.
But that's a peek. That's a peek into the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
This is the year, and again, the presentation, the Health and Strength Conference done by Dragon Door, which is awesome, is going to be in Minneapolis, August 20th and 21st, and this is the year where, for as far as my presentation is concerned, as far as intrinsic excellence is concerned, the title of my book is about, all right, So this is the landscape. Mm-hmm. What is my role in this landscape? What am I supposed to do? Because far too often what we are doing as far as being health, fitness, and medical professionals are concerned is that we measure the landscape based on what we saw maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, where things are far more static.
Yeah.
This is a rapidly changing landscape on a year-over-year basis, and it's very important to make that clear. That way, the role of the professional in this landscape is going to have even far more clarity than before. But we can't base that clarity on something that is static and, you know, for all intents and purposes, extinct.
Right. You know, it was funny. I was walking back from coffee just before coming over here to record, and I found out one of my baristas has started working as a temporary worker for someone that I was an intern for almost 20 years ago. Oh my God. And and I was just thinking about this internship and how we had like just racks and racks and racks of equipment to do what I can do in a higher quality directly from my iPhone. And I've just got an iPhone 5. I don't even have the newest one. But yet I can stream full HD directly to the internet from this phone. And you know, 20 years ago or even 15 years ago, that was unthinkable. You needed so much equipment for that, so much specialized knowledge. I mean, I could name it all off, but no one knows these brands anymore, and it would just make me sound old. So I'm going to not talk about that. But the thing is, the changes are coming rapidly, but why am I not scared? It's because I know the theory. I know what's driving the engine behind it. And the question now isn't how the technology is, but it's more how can you connect with people with that technology? So,
yeah,
you know, at that point, it's like, all right, well, changes in technology, changes in how we, you know, communicate with each other using this technology, that's nothing to be afraid of if you are able to connect with people in any situation, face-to-face and otherwise. And, you know, that's kind of the message I want to put out there for some of my Luddite friends. You know, don't be afraid. People still need that face-to-face, real connection. You know, even if it's over YouTube, they need that real connection.
The role of technology in terms of its capabilities is actually something that's going to be rapidly changing year over year. I'm going to go a little bit on a tangent here. You know, right now we have technology around heart rate, or technology around blood pressure, some technology around force generation, and that same technology around force generation is, you know, there are some algorithms that say, well, it also measures sleep, right?
Right.
And the role of this technology because of that is that it's going to elicit some sort of behavior change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, I know what my heart rate is, and based off of my program, I should be running on heart rate zone 2 versus heart rate zone 1. Because based off of this tech piece of technology, wearable technology, it's going to tell me how I should run. Whereas in the old days, that was guesswork.
Yeah.
And if we really think about what fitness has been for pretty much most of its existence, a good portion of it is guesswork. If you lift a certain amount of weight in a particular set of reps, your biceps will grow. No one has actually observed the phenomenon because we don't have the technology. So there was guesswork in terms of what the phenomenon actually is. So where am I going with this? What if one of these days technology actually catches up? You know, they say that there's that familiar adage in fitness, hey, a moment on the lip, it's eternity on the hips. Well, what if one of these days we do have that type of technology where when you do eat that bite of cheesecake, you can actually track it on an app? And you can actually see it start to disseminate in your stomach, and then it actually starts to deposit itself as adipose tissue on your hips.
Wow.
What if you have technology that can actually project for that so that right before you take that bite, the technology actually says, dude, this is what your hips are going to look like should you go this route. And then all of a sudden, what technology is ultimately going to do, not only in terms of just giving us the ability to illicit behavior change based off of what it's tracking now, which is something as simple as heart rate and blood pressure. But the future of this is one of these days, it might even be able to track something as, this is what's going to happen to your body if you don't sleep enough. This is what's going to happen to your body if you don't eat the right things. This is what's going to happen to your brain if you don't sleep and eat and train the right way. So what it's going to create for us are not just trackable models. These are predictive models. That's very powerful stuff if you think about it. And if you really think about it, we may actually be just 6 or 8 years away from this. We may even have that technology now, but as far as consumer accessibility is concerned, it's just not there. But it does exist to a certain degree.
I hate to tell you this. I think we're closer. And this is just from some personal top secret knowledge I have. and hope to be part of deploying into the world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is amazing how fast things are changing, you know, but at the same time, we need to be out there as ambassadors of a healthy lifestyle, as setting, you know, a positive example, and also, you know, just that human connection. So while technology does change and rapidly evolve in a wonderful way, you know, it's important to remember, we still need to read your book. We still need those four competencies, no matter what kind of magical thing we have running in terms of apps. And,
right.
You know, it's pretty exciting, I'll be honest with you.
It is exciting. It is exciting, especially if you think about the limitless potential as far as the tracking of how exercise, proper nutrition, and proper regenerative behaviors will affect our physiology. But that, as limitless as technology is in terms of how it will develop, it is limited in terms of its scope. And its scope, as of right now, is physiology. For you, and for me, and for many of us who have endeavored in fitness, not only as educators, not only as participants, but also at the end of the day, professionals, we know that once you have these physiological things in place, the endeavor at the end of the day is spiritual, meaning, like what you mentioned with your client, the person who said, hey, you know what, I was able to accomplish this. What that does to that person's spirit in terms of how it uplifted them, how it makes them see themselves differently in terms of their place in the world, their place in terms of overall existence, is far more positive and far more empowering, because this is a person who overcame something that they initially believed was not possible. And that is a spiritual phenomenon, not a physiological phenomenon.
Right.
And as far as we know, there is no technology in existence, or at least being planned, that measures the growth, change of the spirit. The only thing we know that is capable of validating the growth and change of the human spirit is another human being.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why having that type of understanding of your role and why you should succeed, both as a health, fitness, and medical professional, is that what is actually under your charge is not just the human physiology, but the human spirit.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. And I totally agree with that. Well, gosh, Rolando, this has been such a cool discussion. You and I always have the coolest discussions. I got to brag on us a little bit.
Well, thank you. But as I like to say, you know what? Espresso drinkers have the most interesting conversations there are. And I know that you are an espresso drinker.
Absolutely.
As am I. So I think that this is one of the reasons why we have these conversations. But all kidding aside, I'm just really grateful that, you know, that you're a firm supporter of me as a professional, of Intrinsic Excellence. And I always enjoy our conversations. And I'm very grateful for you, you know, for having me on your podcast.
Well, thanks. And I have a hard time figuring out how many people are listening to this, but I can assure you that listenership is growing. And we're now not only, I say we, this is an old habit. I had an e-commerce company for over 10 years. That was me for at least the last five of it. And we was always something. It's like we and the corporation, which is me. So me and my LLC is now we.
Good.
you know,
Good.
we.
Congratulations.
Yes. No, but you know, it's the podcast is now not only on iTunes, but it's added on Stitcher, and I'm working on making it easier to find on Stitcher. I had a user actually contact me. Hey, you should be on Stitcher, and I'm like, I think I wait. I am. Wait, you couldn't find me? Oh, shoot. Let me work on that. But it is up there, and I'll provide all the links, of course, on social media. But you know, if there's another service that people are you know liking for podcasts, please you know send me a message and we'll get it on there. And we want to you know come to where you the listener like to listen. And sounds like you're getting near something interesting there in New York.
Well, yeah, I'm in New York, so yeah, I'm
Yeah.
always getting near something interesting, but it does has not wavered my attention on you.
Awesome. Well, I like that. I actually like it that you were able to call in transit because that's interesting. That's real.
Yes.
It's important to keep it real. It's like I've been doing all these live casts lately with YouTube, and it's a little bit horrifying in some regards. Like last night, I made muffins, these coconut flour muffins, and I'm gonna go back and do an edited version just because I had some technical issues, but I figured them out now. But you know, but it is very real. It is my weird little kitchen, and you know, it's I don't know. There's a realism there that I'm trying to use. And I like that we were keeping that today. All right, well, I will let you get back to your Saturday, but thanks again for calling in, Rolando. This is Rolando Garcia III, book Intrinsic Excellence. You should totally check it out. All right, well, thank you so much, and we'll be checking in with you again. And thank you for listening to the GearyGirl.com podcast.